White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
So good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the February 4th edition of The Heretics Hour, coming to you live from the White Network. Now I'm going to skip some stuff here I was going to talk about and go right to telling you that you're in for a treat tonight. As I have Andre from Total Fascism as my guest. This site, Total Fascism, is at www.totalfascism.com. People probably have a hard time remembering how to spell fascism. It is F-A-S-C-I-S-M, no H in there. It's only been up since about December 10th, 2 months. And so, let's see if I'm going to wait for Andre to call in. He can call in anytime now, and I'll be taking his call. It should come through. So now I'm still here. All right, let me, while I'm waiting for his call, I hope he's not all discombobulated too. I hope he can. He's not really listening to the show, so. I know what I can do. Hold on here. I can send him a Skype message. Cause I told him to wait. I told him I was having trouble and couldn't get on, and he's not actually listening at the website. So, I have to tell him. So I hope he will. You should get that. I've got too many different message boxes open here. This is going to be an interesting show. And let me tell you that, Total Fascism has been up, since about December 10th and, has, only 2 months. And yet, it has become quite a popular and talked about site. And, Andre is just the nicest person that you'd ever want to meet. I like his, very direct approach. I like his no holds barred offensive that he takes. And yet he's never in bad taste and he doesn't take cheap shots. And he's a very good writer. I'm looking at things to see why he hasn't called in yet. I'm looking to, you know, I can't do two things at once, folks. So, forgive me for that. I was going to say to him that, here's a message from him. No answer, he says. I don't know if something happened because of all this hanging up in business. We'll have to get Tan Staffel on that. Tan Staffel, Andre says he's calling in, but he has not getting an answer, and I'm not seeing him on my SkyCon page. So I don't know what needs to be done. Can you help out here in any way? I have to... You know, none of this should have happened. It should not have happened, but it did happen. Okay, here it is. I got it. Hold on. Don't hang up. All right, somebody's here.
Yep, this is me.
That's great. Hello, Andre. All right. Did you just call again and it worked, or did something else
happen?
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on. I just didn't answer before.
Okay.
We're connected now, so.
Okay, good. Well, then we don't have any serious problem here, and we will be able to continue the show. Wonderful. Well, I've been kind of blabbering here trying to fill in. waiting. I did my little introduction of you, telling them that I like your, you know, introducing your site in Total Fascism, and I like your very direct approach. I like your no holds barred offensive, you know, and that you're in good, you stay in good taste, and you don't take cheap shots, and you're just a very nice guy, really. So, I'll just ask you to start out, why did you name your blog what you did, and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background first, is whatever you want to, and how you came about doing this.
Okay, well, I named the blog that, the website, I don't really like to call it a blog, but the website, I named it that, I guess because of just what you said about kind of having a very direct approach. And I think this is the solution to these problems is total fascism. So, that's why I chose that name. As far as my background, I've been involved in, this kind of truth movement thing since I was a teenager. I've run some different websites. I can go into that, I guess, but it doesn't really make much of a difference at this point. But, you know, I've written some articles back 10 years ago, I guess now, and Alex Jones used to post them, and then it, you know, it's a process that you go through of trying to figure this different stuff out, and eventually you end up, I believe, that anybody who was honest with themselves would end up in the same place that I've ended up in with Adolf Hitler as being basically presenting a very comprehensive solution to the same types of problems that we're dealing with as a society in America right now.
That's very interesting because so many people in the so-called truth movement will say, well, Hitler was fine for back then and they might think he did good or he didn't do good or whatever, but it's different today and we have different problems and that doesn't apply to us. And we need to come up with something new and different. And I have thought this through myself and I am with you, and it's nice to see an ally out there saying this, because I think that what Hitler and his group came up with applies kind of all eternally, you know, and it and we can use it, and it does apply for us today. And no sense trying to reinvent things that we don't need to reinvent.
Yeah, that's the way I feel. And the problems that Germany was going through are basically identical to the ones we're going through. It's just like everything that happens in America, it's much more extreme than what Germany was going through. But imagining a completely different system as being something you would want to apply here, I don't know. I would say that pre-industrial revolution, there were different things that you could come up with to base a society on. But after the Industrial Revolution, when everything went from agrarian lifestyles to this urbanization, I don't really see any other system that could apply to this other than a fascist type system.
Okay, and you know, as a woman, there are things about fascism and just the sound of it and so on. It can be think, well, gee, where, you know, I don't know if I like my role here or what is my role going to be. But still, overall, this is what I think would work best. And so that brings me to, how do you see the difference between fascism and National Socialism, or is there one, or why did you decide? Because you talk, let me just say that you speak an awful lot about National Socialism and Hitler, as you already have on the, you know, opening up the program and in your articles and so on. And you don't talk about Italy and Mussolini, but yet you use...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Hitler was, to a large extent, inspired by the system that Mussolini came up with. I don't consider Mussolini to be of the same quality person that that Hitler was, but I consider National Socialism to be a form of fascism. You know, there was Spain took on a similar model as well. And in my personal perception, to use the term National Socialism, it's the same reason that I've decided I don't really feel comfortable using the swastika. I mean, I think this was a very German type of system, and these symbols are all German. And the name National Socialist is obviously, it's something that was German in nature. So I think certain aspects, specific things, are going to manifest differently in America than they did in Germany, just because we as a people have a different kind of soul, I think, than Germany had. So that's why I view fascism as a more general term and National Socialism as very specific.
Okay, well, you know, I thought it would be interesting to me to look up these two terms, you know, in the dictionaries. And of course they have the cultural bias there. But fascism is defined, this is, you know, mainstream, as an authoritarian and nationalistic right-wing system of government and social organization. I guess that would fit what you are talking about, authoritarian and nationalistic, not only government, but social organization. And then in general use, it says extreme right-wing, of course they would say always extreme, authoritarian or intolerant views or practice. Now, when you look up National Socialism, they define it as Nazism. And I looked at several different dictionaries, and they all define it as Nazism, which is really stupid because Nazi or Nazism is a short name for National Socialist, so you can't use that as a definition for National Socialism, right? But then they say in historical terms, they hold it to German history, as you are kind of saying, that it's totally German, the doctrines and practices of the Nazis involving the supremacy of Hitler as Führer. Anti-Semitism is always included with National Socialism, but not with fascism. State control of the economy, they say, rather than authoritarian or whatever. And national expansion, which they don't use for fascism, but they add that for National Socialism with this idea that, you know, you want to go expand out and control more and more, take over other people's territories and so on. So that's the difference. Do you have anything more you want to say about that?
No, I've written an article about it. I can't remember what it's called right now, but it's on my website somewhere where people had kept bringing this up, like trying to play word games and say that there was some kind of, significant difference and that I should be using the term National Socialism if I'm going to be promoting Hitler. But, I don't really feel that it's particularly relevant.
I mean,
you read the terms.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you consider Hitler as a fascist?
Yeah, that's how I view it, is that it was significantly inspired by the fascist movement, and they had the same roots at that turn of the century where there were a lot of people who had come to the conclusion. I mean, it wasn't just Mussolini that came up with this. I mean, there was a large thrust that all of these things that had happened, particularly with the Enlightenment ideology, materialism, and then the development of the machine, the Industrial Revolution, that society needed a singular solution to a multitude of problems, and that became known as fascism. Mussolini was one of the people involved, and I think that the term fits, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, well, you know, you also talk about Adolf Hitler in a spiritual way as an avatar, something in a sense of a transcendental leader of our people. So you see him as a symbolic person for us to be inspired by. So that puts him in a totally different class from these others, these other fascists. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely view him as a spiritual symbol, as something like a religious saint.
Yeah. Well, for me, I like to see him as a real person who still has a real real effect, and we can still talk about his beliefs and so on without putting him on such an elevated level. I think he was a human being, and I don't go along with that particular approach toward Hitler, but I think that that's kind of similar to Veronica Clark, what she was doing in a way. And I know you've been thought very highly of her work, but it's a little early to go into that right now, unless you'd want to.
No, I mean, I don't really have anything to say about Veronica right now.
Okay. Well, now, so people might ask you, well, what are you aiming to accomplish with this site and with your very bold post that you're writing and so on that people like? Because thank goodness people like straight talk and boldness, and just to start out, I'll just leave before I go on with this. What would be your answer to these people? Or, you know, have you answered it on your site? And if so, what did you say?
As far as what my specific agenda is?
Yes.
Well, I think we need a very physical political movement. And, you know, I'm still putting that together in my own mind, but I think this needs to be something very similar to what Hitler did, and something very similar to what the Golden Dawn is presently doing. I think it needs to be both a social and a political movement, in the real world, not on the internet.
Yeah, right. Very good. So, you know, a lot of people agree with you, but the problem is how to go about it. But you have to start somewhere, and I think you're starting with laying out real clearly what we need to have, what we need to expect from our leaders and so on too. And so that's good. Do you have any ideas that you'd like to share with us about how you think that could get started, or how are you still working on that?
Well, I mean, it's just going to have to be some kind of official, organized political body where people can run for office under this platform. I mean, people have said that there's not going to be a political situation to this. They want to keep saying that over and over again. I don't know if there is or isn't, but what I've said is, even if there isn't a political solution, that organizing right now politically is an absolute necessity, because there's no other way to organize. And I mean, Hitler in Mein Kampf is very clear about the idea of using the present structure as far as you possibly can. I mean, he says that it's your duty, if you cannot use the present structure, to go outside of it. But right now, nobody has even attempted to use this present political structure to push a very direct and extremist type of agenda. So I think that's the starting point.
Okay. You know that there's an awful lot of people out there who consider themselves good thinkers in the movement that call for a leaderless revolution, and say that they don't at all think we should form a political party. Now, and then there's also the A3P, which, I shouldn't giggle. I wasn't giggling. That the A3P, I know you, I guess it's because I know you've written about that. And so that's why I did that. But, you know, who felt that we needed a party and, they haven't made too much of an impact. It's hard. It's very hard to create something in real life when we're also spread out and we're used to dealing on the internet with everyone and everything. So, what do you say to the people who call for a leaderless revolution?
Well, where is this leaderless revolution is what I say to them. And I would also say, how does that even make sense? What are you talking about? I don't know. I don't know what that means, a leaderless revolution, unless they're talking about some type of terrorism or something. I mean, which clearly does not accomplish anything. I know Tom Metzger says this, to have a leaderless resistance, and what can you even compare that to? What is the model he is presenting? And I have not seen any model. I have not seen any real life presentation of what these people are even talking about when they say leaderless resistance. So, you know, I guess that's all I can say about that. I don't really understand what it even means.
Well, you know, I'm still thinking about this 1920 speech by Adolf Hitler, why we are anti-Semites. And I was quite impressed, or I was quite a little bit influenced by what he said there at the end of it about why they needed political organization. Because at that time that they were organizing their party, and there were a lot of other parties, there are a lot of people saying, we don't need a political party, and we need to fight the Jews, we need to expose get people educated about what the Jews have done, but we don't need a party to do it. They were against parties. But he said, he answered that and said that it was necessary to have an organization and build it up and have it ready for when the opportunity came that you could take action with it. And he also said that you need to reach the masses and get the reach down and work hard and get the masses on your side, or you're never going to change anything in your country. And you know, I prefer, it's easier to think about a leaderless revolution, Andre, and just say, well, we, you know, just keep doing what we're doing and hope that there's people out there organizing little things and so on. And then we don't, because this idea of organizing the masses and so on is just seems insurmountable. You know, it is such a huge thing to do and that people don't want to undertake it. But, and he made that clear that they had decided they would do it because it was what needed to be done. They couldn't do it without doing that. And so they were starting. Now this was in 1920 and they were just starting. And he made that clear. But you know, through a lot of work and of course they were in a much smaller country that was still pretty homogeneous and a lot of things were different, than we have here in the United States. But even then it was a very, very difficult job. And then they also had to raise a lot of money and so on. Well, you know, so this is starting from where we are in the United States, facing what we're facing. It is a terrible challenge, and it takes a young person like yourself who has strong beliefs and is just willing to doesn't have any other particular objectives in life. You know, like to get rich or to this or that, and is very convinced about helping his own people and identifying with his own people. It takes people like this, but most people are simply don't have what it takes, and it remains to be seen, you know, who will have what it takes. But it's something that is just it's hard to even talk about it. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's going to take real leadership to get this done. I mean, there's no other option. As far as myself, you know, I mean, it's something that if nobody else is going to do it, I feel like I have to. So, I guess that's where I'm at. I mean, obviously this is a huge task, but I don't have anything else to do with my life. Like you said, you know, what else should there be for anyone to do with their lives? A lot of these people on the internet, I mean, it's clear they just want to be entertained and they want to talk. They want to remain anonymous. And I don't understand how, when you have this many threats coming at you, at who you are as a people and as individuals as well, we're being attacked. I don't understand how you can just sit there and do nothing. It strikes me as some type of a mental illness. But I mean, I think a lot of people are just waiting for some kind of an organization to appear so that they can, you know, we saw a lot of people out there supporting Ron Paul. I mean, this turned out to be a complete hoax, as I had said it was. But you know, people want that. They need that involvement, is what I'm seeing.
Yes, you're right. People are waiting, and it is somebody has to step forward who has you know, who has at least part of what it takes. I mean, he has to have what it takes. I mean, and then see where it goes. I mean, it's a rare thing. But here we are at this juncture in our history, and we're facing what the Germans felt that they were facing. Pretty much, the destruction of their, not only their society and their nation, but their people, which is the nation. And that's what we're facing. So, you know, I appreciate what you're trying to do. If you don't mind, we can look at some of your blog posts. I have checked through them, and some of them I would like to talk about a little bit. And that would inform people and give you an opportunity also to say what you maybe detail further what you meant or what you didn't mean about it. But I noticed that right from the start you were writing about the few posts that appeared in December. You just started. Your first one, I think, was December 10th. Right from the start, you were writing about Jews. You wrote about National Socialist policy. That was their, I think, was that the animal protection laws. And you wrote about shills in our movement. And that was a good beginning. And then on January 2nd, you posted brutal extremism is the way forward. You know, that, and it started out with something like something about Hitler. And then it said brutal extremism is the way forward. And you, that, you know, now there's a scary title for a post, but reading it, I liked it very much. And, you started with a good quote from Mein Kampf. I think it's even worth reading. It's not that long. If you have it there in front of you, you can read it.
I do not have my computer right in front of me. I have my copy of Mein Kampf, but I'd have to look it up. I don't have
Okay, you mind if I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I probably don't read it as well as you would, but anyway, the quote you picked out says, "The soul of the great masses of people is receptive to nothing weak or halfway." Like, and this is Hitler's writing. Like a woman whose spiritual perceptions are attracted more by the strength of a leader than the reason of a follower, the masses love the ruler more than the follower, and they find more inner satisfaction in a doctrine that tolerates nothing that it itself has not granted approval and freedom. The masses are seldom able to make much use of such freedom and are likely to feel neglected if given too much. They are as unconscious of the shamelessness that intellectually terrorizes them as they are of the outrageous mistreatment of their human liberty. After all, they have no clue about the doctrine's internal error. They only see the ruthless strength and brutality of its expression, which they always yield to. Well, what I get out of this mostly is that he's not bashing the masses and saying, oh, they're so stupid and they can't do anything. He's just telling the truth about the majority of people and that they are willing to follow a strong leader. And that's just a fact of human nature. It's always been true. And if you are kind of unyielding, he says ruthless strength and brutality, but it doesn't really have to be that way. It's just that if whatever comes in a strong way, the masses will yield to it. And we see how they do. They have yielded to brutal dictators. They have yielded to anything for which they have no way to stand up against it. And so he's saying we need to bring, we have to be like this, but we're not really out to harm our people or take advantage of them because we love them. So how do you, is that what, how, why did you use that?
Well, I interpreted it the same way you did. We naturally, as human beings, existed in tribes, which are kind of like packs. And at that point in our development, which was the vast majority of our development, when you had a leader from among your own people, his interests were always going to coincide with your interests. So you didn't ever have this idea of having a leader who stands up from among you as a people and actually has his own agenda against your agenda as a people. This never happened. So what you chose a good leader on was to yield to a leader was based on the strength that he presented. So this is the way our psychology works, that if we see a figure who is presented as strong and capable of leading, then the natural instinct is to follow him. Because we do not have in our subconscious an understanding of the concept that a leader who rises up and says that he is one of us is going to have his own agenda, rather than the well-being of the masses. Because this is a concept that came with development, the idea of a leader who has something to gain by going against his own people. So, I mean, this is something that I look at a lot, is the fact that we did exist in these tribal packs as humans, and that's what our psychology is still believes that we're in that type of a situation. So that has to be understood when you're talking about the masses and the way they react to the way things are presented. The media presents itself as representing the dominant paradigm of society, and people accept that because it's our nature to want to go along with what everyone else is going along with. And this is why I believe it's impossible and wrong to blame the masses for going along with what they've gone along with. Because that's their basic primal psychology, is to go along with what they view their society is going along with. They don't think about it critically. That's not how we're designed, because we existed in collectives in the tribe, and the Jews have come up with this idea of individuality and forced it on us, and it doesn't actually exist. What you see in this quote unquote individualist society is that people naturally form collectives. I mean, when you see the way people are with these sports, they want to put makeup on their faces and wear these jerseys and all be recognized as part of a collective. The same thing happens with religion. The same thing happens with fashion trends. All these different kind of cults that people form, that they want to have this collective identity with other people. So this is something that we cannot remove from our basic psychology, are these primitive, instinctive, psychological drives.
Well, that's very good. Very good. I think you're exactly right. And How does this fit with libertarianism? Doesn't this show how libertarianism promotes the idea that everybody can think for themselves and have their own idea? And you know, it doesn't work because, as you said, people really aren't built to do that. They're going to end up falling prey to whatever is the strongest influence set up against them.
Yeah, and the libertarian doctrine, I mean, Murray Rothbard, his name, Von Mises, is the guy who, I don't know how you say his name.
He's a
Jew from Austria.
Yeah.
And then going up through the present period now, this has all been Jews. Ayn Rand was a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, Peter Schiff is representing the libertarian movement. Ron Paul, I do not believe is a Jew, and I believe he does believe what he's saying. But he writes books with Jews. He supports quote unquote Austrian economics, which is an entirely Jewish philosophy. I view libertarian as combining the worst possible aspects of any social order, where they mix social liberalism with, I guess, what you would call economic conservatism, this kind of abusive, exploitive capitalist system with this sickening, degrading social free-for-all, where you have all this kind of weird sex and people, you know, just a total free-fall of basic human morals under this do-whatever-you-want type of system. So the relevance that Jews are the ones that promoted this is that they are a completely collectivist group of people. And they're promoting individualism as a means to conquer their host societies.
And also to make it more amenable to themselves.
Yeah.
So that people are seen as individuals and not as types or races or this or that, so that, you know, this protects them. They want to be seen as individuals even though they don't behave that way.
Yeah, and then you get the good Jew type thinking where this is an individual Jew. He has his own individual beliefs about this issue. Instead of looking at them as a collective group that is inside of our society and has their own agenda.
Yeah, well, you're already starting in it. This is a good place to bring up what some people would, more criticism would be that, well, why do you blame everything on the Jews? You know, how can you point to the Jew as the one main enemy and problem that we have? So what would be your answer to that?
Well, any time you see a problem, if you look at it and look into it, you're going to find Jews. I mean, there's virtually no problem that you can think of that our society is suffering from, really that any society in the world is suffering from, that you can't find a Jew who's responsible for it. I mean, the collapse of the social order, these economic problems, the whole corruption of the political system, everything has been instigated by this single group of people. So it's more just an issue of the reality of it. I mean, it's not so much a philosophy, it's just an objective reality.
Well, yes. Okay. Well, you had a list here. You said that in this same post, which is called, if anybody wants to look it up on your blog, it's called The Way Forward, Brutal Extremism is the Way Forward, on January 2nd it was posted, a little over a month ago. But it's a very good one, and you make some basic important points. And you say that, thus it is left to us to be equally extreme in our efforts, because you said the present system we suffer under is absolutely extreme. in nature, and therefore we have to be equally extreme in our efforts to turn the masses away from the lunatic monstrosity that is the Jewish cultural, social, and economic apparatus. So you say you have these strong points where they preach materialism, we shall preach spirituality. That's good. Where they preach multiculturalism, we shall preach nationalism rooted in blood and heritage. But how do you see the nationalism working in the United States?
Well, this is the thing. This whole thing is a lot easier in Greece, where you can point to where you can point to Alexander the Great, because I don't really have any emotional attachment to any of the founding fathers and their ideals. This was one of my issues with that American Third position. I don't really see them as having done anything good. And so where do you draw from, for the American identity and this concept of an American race that's made up of these various races from Europe, various ethnic groups. I mean, Hitler called them races. I guess I would say I consider the white race to be a race. It's kind of a long, complicated issue, but where do we draw that identity from? And I don't think we have a lot to, historically to draw that from. We can see ourselves now, and we can respect the fact that our ancestors came over here from Europe. I mean, this was a big deal coming from Europe to the United States, crossing that ocean 200 years ago or even longer. My ancestors probably came here just a couple hundred years ago, but and I think we need to work to form a more cohesive identity, and I'm not sure I know all the details of that just yet.
Okay, yeah, well, it's difficult because that's why, well, I'll save this for later if it comes up. I'll go ahead with what you wrote here. When they push abortion, pornography, homosexuality, and promiscuity, and I'm glad you included homosexuality in that, and you say we shall force the sexual morality of our ancestors. Very good, very strong. And then, though, here, where they teach feminism, we shall teach that a woman has her place at home. This can be controversial, particularly with a lot of women today, women don't want to be told that they have their place at home. But you know, if we could have for myself, if we could have this improved state to live in, where particularly a racial state, and all of these good things, you know, all of these cleaned up stuff, and we could really be a united people, that would not bother me at all. My only concern with that was this, and that's where I make the distinction between fascists and national socialists, is that and also what you were just talking about, whether we identify with our nationality, it's easier for me, and I prefer to identify with German nationalism, even though I wasn't born in Germany and I don't live in Germany, but because I trust my fellow Germans, I have a feeling in me, you know, of I trust German men not to go overboard in being anti-female or something like that, you know, in respect, because German men respect and love their German women, even under the National Socialists they did, and that would be perfectly satisfactory to me. And not every woman had to, you know, be in the same category, because there were different women. Look at Hannah Reich and the filmmaker. Now I'm not even going to be able to think of her name. She's so famous, but just trying to come up with it, who made those great films. Neither one of those women married or had children, But they were accepted because of, you know, it wasn't so forced on everybody. But that I have more faith, you know, in that which is closer to me as my national people than just in a bunch of white men. You know what I mean? So that's, I'm just giving the woman's point of view here for women who might need to be represented. What would you?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. In my view, there are women such as yourself, especially when women get older, where they are, you know, more capable of doing different types of things, or have a more of a desire to do different types of things. I mean, in my experience, what most women, I mean, not every single one, but the vast majority of women want is to be taken care of by a man so that they can produce children. And this goes back to that tribal sort of thing. But this is also the majority of mammals have this. I mean, there's always a difference in the behaviors of men and women and among any species going down to insects. So, because human infants need such care for so many years, I mean, it's really, a child is not hardly capable of taking care of itself until it's what, five? And even then it obviously can't go out and fend for itself. But I mean, a human child needs a lot of attention. And kind of what this feminist thing is presenting is that women should forego having children in order to pursue some type of mannish agenda, you know, having a career and all of this. And I think this is going against basic biology in a really bizarre way.
I do, too. I agree with that. And, you know, I really, just speaking for myself, I like to be at home. I've always liked being at home. And it's not that I had some great, I always wanted to do something, but I didn't have any great idea about a career or anything like that. So, you know, I agree with all of this, and that if you just have that fear when you hear some of these men talk and this idea of male supremacy and so on, that I just wouldn't want to be, without protection and without some kind of fairness, you know, without being respected. I wouldn't want to do without respect and protection, you know, in this society. So that's why when I think of a German nationalist society, I feel comfortable with that. When I think of just white nationalism and I hear some of these people talking and so on, some of these guys, which aren't as, you know, aren't of your caliber and quality, it makes me a little nervous. So, but hopefully, you know, we none of these people would ever become leaders and would ever get the get control.
Well, yeah, I think it's worth noting that, you know, it's the, because this is about, besides eating, you know, our most basic drive is to reproduce. I mean, this is a very base animal drive to reproduce. I mean, that's why the Jews are able to push all this sex in the media and have everybody get obsessed with it, because this is our most base drive. That's not even a, it's not even a human. It goes all the way down to insects, you know, this sex drive, this drive to reproduce. And, for a man, I mean, of course he wants his children to live. So the natural thing, and we've been so ripped out of the natural order by this Jewish society, but then the natural drive for a man is to want to protect and care for women, because, I mean, just on a basic level, the reason being that these are the ones that are taking care of the children. So, I mean, there's no reason, if you have any kind of a natural society, that any man would want to be abusive or take the rights away from women.
But there are such cases, and there are such men, and if they feel like they can get away with it, they do that. So there are such, and there would have to be laws against that too. I'm just saying there would have to be laws protecting women. And as soon as you say laws protecting women, these men all, you know, start thinking about, the current, what are they called? These laws we have, you know,
domestic violence laws.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, minority, you know, protection of minorities and stuff. They think about that, and which are kind of anti-male, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But there's still, well, you have to have some laws protecting children and women. And, you know, in the pure fascist, history and mythology and so on, I guess it's not mythology, but it goes back to Rome. A lot of men bring up the idea of, that existed then of the father being the total, ruler of his family in ways, and they think that's good, but, I don't know. I think there needs to be, along with that, there would need to be laws protecting women and children from this, total dictatorship of the father. I don't think we'd ever go back to that, truthfully. I don't think women today would stay, you know, women today wouldn't, after what they've experienced in the, they wouldn't allow that, but I don't know. Men say, "Well, we'll just force it." They won't have a say.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know who you're talking about that says this stuff, but I mean, I think there is a natural order that both men and women fit into that has been upset. By this modern system. So, I mean, my goal is to restore that natural order on every level. But, on the level of the male and female, there is a clear natural order and roles that people feel comfortable with. And, I think this whole feminist thing has been first and foremost an attack on femininity and the ability of a woman to be a woman. It's stripped her of her identity as a nurturing bringer of children. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's my view on that. I don't think that any real men have any desire to beat on women or, you know, abuse them in any way.
Well, most don't, but we all have, experience with seeing some of that, in our lifetime. I mean, with other people, neighbors and so on. So, you know, I know it can be because there are brutish men. Well, we've got less than a minute. When we come back, we're going to go for our break, and I am hearing the prompts, so I guess we'll hear the music too, and that means we're in good shape here. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, I do invite you to call in and talk to Andre yourself, and we still have a lot of things we can talk about, just the two of us, but it's be the time that you can call in at 1-830-443-4911, 830-443-4911, and I will check my email. Don't hang up, Andre. Stay on the line.
All right.
Es ist einer dieser Tage, an dem wir bei Oma sind. Es duftet nach Kuchen und Kaffee. Wir lauschen ihren Worten, ihre Tränen sind nicht zu übersehen. Wenn sie von Oma erzählt, sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt. Du warst ein guter Mann, die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gabst ein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and you're listening to the Heretics Hour on Monday, February 4th. I mean, funny, it says March 4th down here. It's February 4th. All right. And my guest is Andre from Total Fascism on the web. And it's a site that's only been up for a couple of months, but it's become very popular, and Andre is a great writer and a great speaker, and so we're going to continue here. I've already invited callers and gave out the number, and you can also send an email. I didn't have anything when I checked during the break, but I want to continue just for a second here with we were talking about your post, Brutal Extremism is the Way Forward, Andre. And that was posted on January 2nd. And just one more thing about that. You write that we will call for the recriminalization of homosexuality. Now, that's another thing that I'm for. But a lot of people are not and think that that is really extreme. And they don't think we should be so hard on homosexuals. And they're good people, too. And, you know, they're talented and how do you defend what your position there with about homosexuals?
Well, my position is that homosexuality is a contagious mental illness. I believe it is absolutely contagious. And I believe that maybe not most, but a large enough percentage of homosexuals are also pedophiles, and that they abuse children, and then the children grow up, many of them, to take on a homosexual identity because they get confused in childhood about their sexual identity and think that it has something to do with other men. So, I've said that we should possibly at least consider reinstating the death penalty for homosexuality. I don't know if I would necessarily push that, but these people need to be isolated from the rest of society at the very least. I think it is a mental illness, and maybe it should be treated as that type of a thing would be treated, institutionalization. But I don't have any desire to accept this in society as some type of quote alternative lifestyle. I don't think it's acceptable in any way.
Okay, again, that comes to the idea, which is a very different, the opposite of libertarianism, which is and not even authoritarianism, but an idea that everyone in a homogeneous society would be thinking basically the same way and having the same beliefs, and because we would be taught that, and we would teach our children this in the schools, and the schools would be run, according to the beliefs of the society. And a lot of people just are really scared of this because they've gotten so used to the freedom of, that we're convinced is freedom to think and do whatever we want and all these alternatives to take. And this is a huge difference. And you have to really, I guess, be sick of our liberal societies, in order to see this as a good alternative. And I'm sick of it. I mean, when you talked, the reason I can accept, a woman's places basically in the home and so on is because I am so sick of these sexual images of women in all these newspapers, particularly in European newspapers. Somebody's calling. I'm going to answer the call, so I'll be quiet now and let you talk about this and go on to whatever else you'd like to say. But, I'm just really sick of the kind of filthy stuff that's being promoted for us. So that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. The post-feminism, they presented this image of females being, quote, equal to men as if they weren't already, I guess. And then they developed this, sexualization of culture from that, as if it was a woman's right to use her body in this manner as basically a weapon against the biology of men.
Okay.
Which,
yes.
Which is
all
what
right.
I view all this pornography and just sex everywhere, these constant images of naked women, because that does something naked and, whatever. I guess you're not allowed to show naked women on the normal television stations, but they show just about naked women. Scandally clad, and that this is a weapon against the biology of men. I that's the way I view it, because there's nothing, as a man, and all men know this that aren't homosexuals, I guess, when you see these images of women, you respond physically to them. I mean, it does something on a very primal level. And
yeah. I'm going to have to interrupt.
This has been exploited.
I've got two people. I've got two people on the line now. The first one that called in was from 954 area code. Would you like to give your name and where you're from, caller?
Yeah, this is Stuart. I'm down in Hollywood, Florida.
Okay, hi, Stuart.
How you doing?
The other caller, just hold on if you don't mind, or maybe I'll ask just your name and have you identify yourself. 614,
That's me.
Oh, that's you. Well, I answered another one, but I guess it disappeared. I guess I didn't answer it soon enough. I thought something changed here. Yeah, all right. So we've just got Stuart. Great.
Okay. You know, it's really quite rare to find someone who understands what fascism is, because the worst thing you can tell somebody is you're a fascist. And I have thought of myself as that for 20 years. And because I suppose what influenced me most was the autobiography by Mussolini, you know, and later I read, you know, Mein Kampf. And the idea behind it, and it was a movement of really in the 1920s, it was pretty strong across Europe. And in France, yeah, I think it was Action Française, which was a movement. And even in Portugal, I think the Salazar regime, I think, was kind of moving in that direction. And, of course, you know, in Spain and Italy and Germany. But the thing is, it was an attempt to rein in capitalism, which was becoming international capitalism, which is to say finance capitalism. And that's how I understand it. And it was an attempt to say the nation doesn't exist for the economy. The economy exists for the benefit of the nation. And that was really what I think fascism was. And but you tell people you're a fascist, they think, oh, you know, you're you want to just kick doors in. And that's a very, you know, ignorant understanding of it. The other point I wanted to make was on, you know, how to gain a mass following. And I think we have a worse situation than existed in Germany in the 20s, because we're shut out of the electoral process right now, at least on a national level and probably on the state level as well, because of the fraudulent voting machines they have, which the computerized machines can be pre-programmed. And it's been documented even before that of this problem, but it's especially bad with the pre-programming of the computerized election machines. So with that in mind, I think the right approach is what Golden Dawn is doing in Greece. And if anybody is not familiar with it, they can find some of their YouTube videos, whereas they're taking an approach which I believe groups like in the Middle East, like Hezbollah and Hamas have taken, where it's not just a political movement, it's a social movement to help the people survive and provide basic social services. So what's happening is you have a situation where you have a dual power situation developing, where you have parallel organizations which are actually doing something for people and also challenging the legitimate state and their corruption, and which provides the foundation for a future society. So I think this dual approach is something that I think it's only thing left open to us, because the electoral process is closed down on a national level and probably a state level. Now, the last point I want to make before I monopolize too much time is you're absolutely right, I believe, when you quote Hitler about the people liking strength. And this is why I think David Duke, for example, despite all the good work he's done, and I don't mean to put him down, but I think he takes the wrong approach with this wishy-washy approach and touchy-feely, and I think that that's not going to inspire and motivate people. So anyway, thank you for the time, and I look forward to your response.
Thank you, Stuart. Okay, what would you like to say about that, Andre?
Well, I agree with basically everything Stuart said. The first issue about the fascism as a response to this international capitalism. This international capitalism only became possible after the Industrial Revolution, when the whole order of everything changed. And there needed to be a response. And the response that was put forward by the Jews was obviously Marxism, communism. And so what they did there was kind of preempt any kind of cohesive European-based response to that, some kind of white response to this international capitalism, by putting in this communism as the default position for anyone who was opposed to international capitalism. So they set this up so they could have a, you know, just play both sides of this. It's a controlled opposition, I guess is what you would call that. So what fascism was a real people's response to this system of international capitalism, and they also had to address the communism, which was a programmed Jewish response to this emerging system of just global control through finance. So yeah, and then his point about what was his second point?
About a mass
movement and David
Duke.
Movement.
Social.
And I completely agree with that too. I think Golden Dawn is laying out a format here, and he compared it to Hezbollah. That's a very good comparison. I mean, what Hezbollah has done, being not just a political organization but also a social organization, and this is what Hitler did. I mean, this is what the SA was, which was a street military basically, and this is what Golden Dawn is doing. I mean, you can see these boys, young men between the ages of, you know, from the late teens to the early 30s or mid 30s. Not that older people couldn't be involved, but, you know, strong young men that are angry at society and what it's given them are out on the streets as basically a military force. And, this is what I was talking about with the political organization being, somewhat necessary to provide a structure, but that should build up a whole collective of people thinking the same way. And we don't have anything like that right now. I'm not aware of anybody even trying to do it. So, I agree with everything he said there.
Don't you think we would need to do it to pick out an area and start there? We couldn't do it all over. This is the size of this country is what makes the difference between a place like Greece or, you know, the Middle Eastern countries or even Germany. You know, it's just too unwieldy. But if some people who lived in a certain area, of course, a lot of things start in California. You're in a good area. I'm not going to say where it is, but you are in a good area to start something. But where you could get people organized there and start a program in a certain.
Well, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I don't have any need to hide where I am. But I don't know how that would work here. I'm still figuring a lot of this stuff out myself, to be honest. I don't want to say, you know, I don't have answers about this, but I think you're probably right that it would need to start from a certain place in the country, because it's not like in Germany or
it's tiny. Even in Germany they started in Munich, and it was a Munich based party and program, and they slowly spread out. They got, you know, people represented other parts of Germany, but it wasn't as strong. It was always considered something that was going on in Munich. So you have to start small and grow. That's what you have to do.
We definitely need to. You have to start someplace. So I don't think there's any shame in starting small. I mean, right now we don't have anybody doing anything. As far as his point about David Duke, I would agree with that. I think David Duke comes across with this kind of Mr. Rogers type thing that is just so fake, and I just don't even. I mean, you can't really argue with very much of what he says, except his. I mean, I think he supports Ron Paul and all this sort of intellectual conservatism, this type of stuff, which I think is silly and Jewish. But, you know, all these people come out and say that he's got all these prostitutes and he's, you know, always womenizing, and that I think he was in jail for gambling away contributor funds. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would prefer if he came out and said, well, yeah, you know, I got a problem with hookers and gambling, but here's what I have to say. He comes across as fundamentally dishonest. So, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody not to listen to him or whatever. That, like, the information he presents, it's, I mean, it's pretty basic. And but he's been doing this for 30 years, at least. I don't even know how long. And yeah. What does he have to show for it? Absolutely yeah. nothing, except he probably lives a pretty comfortable life.
Yeah. Well, so, that's right. Okay.
A lot of these people want to be comfortable, and then once they get comfortable by, maybe they start out with good intentions, but once they get comfortable, it's like, you know, they quit caring so much and they just want to uphold this, this position of being able to live off basically not doing very much.
That's right.
So I see this a lot, and you know, I feel that for my family and, you know, future generations, that something needs to be done. I mean, I've never really cared very much about making money anyway. So,
that's why it takes younger people to, once you've been around so long and, you know, you're just not going to sacrifice that much and you don't have that energy and and, you know, there is the natural cycle of life too. You know, from kids to young people to middle-aged people to older people and, you know, you start preparing for leaving this world. I mean, it's just these things, your whole mentality fits the age that you're at. And so it takes young people. Now, in 1920, when Hitler made that speech we were talking about, he was 31 years old. And he had a lot of life experience up till then. That was good. You have to be at least not out of your 30s, I think. Now, let's just go on to another one of your blogs. I like the one on January 6th, Outlawing Obesity. And just remind people that they can call in at 830-443-4911. Outlawing Obesity. I certainly go along with that, and I like what you wrote about it, and I like this comment by Jarl. There were only three comments to this blog, though, this post. So people probably just agreed with it. But he said a fascist diet should consist of mainly meat and vegetables, and every child should be forced to play a sport of some kind, and even adults should be pressured into competing in some athletics as well rather than just watching them. I think this, using the name Jarl, that's very German. That's a German, high level, knight or something like that. Not actually a knight, but something like that. And, meat and vegetables, that's good. And I don't go for vegetarianism. I think vegetarianism is not the right diet for us. And, it's true that Hitler became a vegetarian, and that was the biggest mistake he ever made in my perspective. And it was not Dunkirk. People were still saying, in fact, I heard a program just today I listened in on, and some of these people were saying, well, I brought it up again. Oh, you know, what about Dunkirk? The biggest mistake he ever made. Why did he do that? Oh, he let all those, and on they went. Well, his biggest mistake was not Dunkirk. It was becoming a vegetarian. But you couldn't talk him out of it.
Well, this was just shows how, just how gentle of a soul he was, regardless of, you know, his public presence, that he didn't want to kill animals. I mean, that's what type of a person this was. But yeah, I agree with you about vegetarianism. I don't support that. I do not like anything about the present, meat industry. I think it's abusive to animals. Completely in a sick way. I don't know if people really know about how this works, the way that most meat is produced, where they keep these animals all locked up and I just think it's, you know, that a society where people have respect for each other are going to have respect for animals.
Yes.
And I don't see that in this society.
We've got another caller, Andre, and so let's just hear what he has to say. This is 865 area code. Hello, caller. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hey, how you doing? I'm going to use my internet handle, A Servant. I'm a pretty regular poster on Andre's blog there. He knows me. How you doing, Andre?
Well, I'm familiar with you too, A Servant. I'm glad to hear you call in. What do you want to talk to Andre?
I'm from East Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Carol, why am I pulling up two different shows here? Just real quick on something on the technical side, and I played on my computer. You guys are at a different time, like a time from the back. I don't know. Should I just close it out and reopen it? Maybe?
Yeah.
I won't do it while I'm on the phone anyway. After I get off, I could just hear you guys online here. I just want to make a couple comments.
Okay.
If you've been paying attention to the blog, you saw I had a couple of monster posts over there. Sorry, Andre, the website, not the blog.
It's all right, man.
I haven't heard you yet. Oh, yeah, you can hear me. Okay. One of the reasons was on Andre's essay on feminism that has kind of been of a, I don't know what you would say, a little pet project of mine over the last few years, the same time as I've kind of woken up to the Jewish question. One of the aspects, of that was feminism. And on top of that, I just wanted to put it out there, Carol, because I can't disagree with you in any way or shape or form of what you said over 100. So I just want to add something to it that I think it's become so ubiquitous and the feminist paradigm has become so intrusive and deeply ingrained in our society that I think everybody, men and women, aren't cognizant as to the deep psychological damage that it's done to masculinity and the good aspects, the creative aspects, the leadership aspects, of righteous masculinity. And in all honesty, it's hard to have these conversations, especially when you're speaking with, females because of the indoctrination, I think, not necessarily because what you're saying is so wrong, but the feminist indoctrination that we've been through, that everybody gets so sensitive so quickly. But if we don't have these conversations, I don't think we're gonna progress. We will not. Because the fact of the matter is, if you look at, of course, there's always exceptions to everything. Carolyn, you're a great exception to the rule, of course. And they should always be allowed for. I think we should have the same as like with affirmative action or, the racial issue. What we should have is this freedom of association. If we have freedom of association, things go back, to quite normal, very quickly, I believe. Instead of this forced integration, this forced multiculturalism, affirmative action programs, et cetera, et cetera. But back to the feminist aspects, exceptions always will happen and it should be made, allowed to happen. There should never be any, law. It should be your cultural values, that would, condemn a woman to the house or she couldn't be in this profession. And, if, the history that we're taught is true that, these type of laws did exist, I don't agree with them. And I understand, 150, 200 years ago, there was laws and books that, women could not ever, no matter what under circumstances, own property or leave their husband, no matter how abusive he was. I don't agree with those laws. Their women should have equity under the law. But that's not what's happening today in any way, shape, or form. We have a feminist supremacist movement. If you really read their writings, the vast majority of the feminist movement, it's just like it's a Jewish movement, doesn't it?
That's right. If they're all Jews and a few others. Basically.
Yeah, they paint themselves in the public eye of being what they're really not. And if you really look at the underpinnings of the feminist movement, it is a very, man-hating movement. The vast majority of them are militant lesbians. There's countless stories across university campuses, in the thousands of, required in many courses to take women's studies, feminist history, which are man-hating sessions and, traditionalists or conservatives are thrown out of the course. And, it's been said time and time again. Obviously, you can see by my old posts, I could probably write a book on the subject. I feel like I could. Just how far down it goes once you wake up to this. My point being is that the fact of the matter is that in any, stable, civilization that produces an ambiance that we would want, an environment that, we think in Western society is something that we would want to live in, it's just not done by matriarchs. That's not a slight on women. It's just not done. It's not to say every man that takes a leadership position are good men either. But there is something about the superstructure of the rational mind that men have to be given something in society to be able to buy into it and contribute that to society. Now, right now, there's no reason for the vast majority of men to have any skin in the game. You know, women have beauty and the power to give children to the world. And those are very, very powerful qualities. Men used to have a sense of, ownership of their family and their property. Of course, as soon as you say ownership, people get their hackles all up that you're talking about enslaving women. Well, what they don't talk about is the other side of the equation. There's a massive responsibility that came along. You had to take care of your family. You had to nurture your family. You had to grow them. I posted on one of my comments over there that I'm very sure, not too long ago, you're talking about, Carol, the protection of women. When men were allowed to have skin in the game, when they were given, this pride of actually being a man and providing for their family, protecting their family, you know, I think cases like, rape and abuse of spouses would be handled very, very quickly by a few brothers, uncles, and fathers. I don't think they had to worry about that too much because, most Western men are repulsed by the idea of violence against women. This whole cultural meme out there that, epidemic of violence against women, it's fabricated. It's just not true. If you really look into the stats, a lot of it's been fabricated and exaggerated by man-hating radical feminists. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation, especially for, older, mature women like yourself, Carolwood, to be aware of that. I think it's a huge, huge aspect that's not really discussed. And, it's said time and time again about men, just in general of, we can't get to the masses because everybody's been, infantile. That has an infantilized, if I can say that, as infantile mentality. And I think a big, big part of that is that there's no incentive for men in our country to grow up anymore because there's nothing in it for them. I mean, if you really talk to the vast majority of young men today, even middle-aged men, they will tell you that almost every man, they know, I shouldn't say almost every man, but, that everybody has stories of a man that has been, lost his house, had his kids taken away, been dragged through the ringer. All of their role models, especially if you're white, you're heterosexual, of course. Yeah, if you're a minority and you're gay, you're painted as being something great in the media.
I agree with you. I certainly agree with what you're saying. Let's let Andre respond to that. And why don't you stay on the line? And I'd also like to know what you all have to say about the pornography epidemic among men. That concerns me. I've talked about it some.
It's a huge concern, no doubt about it.
Andre, are you still there?
Yeah. I believe that men have been stripped of all their power completely, and that this is a horrible situation for young men growing up where they don't really have a natural place in society. I think it's the same thing for women, but it's a little bit different, I guess. But it's the same concept of not being able to enter the natural order. And when you have women becoming men, basically, what are men supposed to do in that situation that they don't have any power? They don't have the ability to exercise power. And I mean, the whole society is geared against men being masculine. And I think it is the same thing as the way the society is geared against women being feminine, but women grow up with a lot more options, I guess, as far as what they're able to do. Whereas,
oh, sure, absolutely. Now they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I was saying is that For a starting point for getting, that's what you guys were talking about, and that's what prompted me to call in. For getting a political party going or something. The fact of the matter is there's not enough Carolyns out there. But, and right now, of course, there's not enough of, the men out there either. But at least if you look on the blogs, the websites, you know, the vast majority are male contributors. And as you guys were both talking about, and we're all of agreement here, there's a certain biology that's hardwired. And although we can take the exceptions and hold them up, you have to have a certain critical mass to get the social movement going. And the vast majority of females have a very strong nesting security instinct. That's not a slight on them. We just have to deal with it. That's the truth. The vast, not the vast majority, but a much higher percentage of males can, are much more comfortable lone wolfing it. You know, and that is what it's going to take to get something like this off the ground. And if we don't kind of nurture that and recognize it, it's really going to help with hamper our efforts. So go ahead.
Well, yeah, I think that the appeal here is going to be to young, disenfranchised males who have had all their power stripped away from them, more so than it's going to be to a lot of other groups, you know, especially older people. I consider this, fundamentally a youth movement. Mussolini talked about that, but yeah, the strength is in disenfranchised young men, I think. So yeah, restoring the natural order, I think, is what this is all about. So on every level that needs to be done, because the Jews have attacked every single aspect of human nature. Carolyn, you mentioned pornography. Did you want to talk about that?
Sure. Oh, you want me to say something?
You can say your piece on it. Yeah.
Well, I've had some programs about it.
I don't know what needs to be said on it that hasn't been said. I agree completely.
Yeah.
It's dehumanizing to everyone. It's sickening. I mean, what kind of a, and it's Jews. His name is Al Goldstein that got this legalized under some kind of a freedom of speech pretense. And you know, it's all Jews that make this. Normal white people don't have this kind of thing in them. I mean, they can be pushed in these directions, but it's not a part of our nature to create things like this. It's the Jews who do this. And the whole thing of pornography has been entirely Jewish. Nobody, there's not even any argument about that. Mm-hmm. You know, and people have written about that, but it's dehumanizing on every level, this pornography to men and women. And there's just no reason why this should be legal. It's insane.
Yeah. I'll say this. It's insidious because, oh, what is this saying here? I don't know. It's insidious because it like you said, Andre, it's hard to be immune to it. We're not immune to sexual imagery and sexual messages and so on. And so they use this to get at us. And what you have to do, you have to outlaw it. You can't say, well, these men should just stay away from it, or, you know, we should be strong enough. That's the same. The whole thing about telling white people that it's their fault. You know, it's our fault that we've allowed all this to happen.
Yeah.
When these Jews are so evil in the how they look for your weak points and then go after them. And you know, nobody's
really
that strong. So you have to be outlawed.
This is really the truth. Yeah. So I think the female version of that is this sentimentality that we have in society. I think this is sold, there's all this romance and all this stuff about finding the perfect soulmate, and all this is sold to women in the same way that this porno and all this other stuff to do with, you know, sexual imagery is used against men. I think the sentimentality and romantic, you know, flowery type, you know, because that's what they say, that these romance novels are porno for women.
Well, they are. And, you know, I want to say, I grew up as a child reading, well, I wasn't really a child, but probably a very young, maybe 10, 11, 12, reading these romance magazines that came out then. I remember there was two of them, and one was called Modern Romance, and I forget the other one was even more well known. I forget the name of it though. And I had an aunt who who had a sister-in-law who got all those magazines and then gave them to her when she was done with them, and then she saved them up. Then she'd bring them over to our house, and my sister and I would read them. And my mother didn't know enough to not allow us to read them, and we read those things constantly. And it was just, I was filled with those ideas that life was like that. And I was waiting for this perfect man, and I would just swoon, and, you know, everything would be, like magic. And, anyway.
Yeah, it's
yeah, so you have, women thinking.
Go ahead, Andre.
Go ahead, or are you going to go ahead? I
was going to say you have women thinking all these romantic ideas like you just described, Carolyn, and you have men thinking about these insane
sex
acts that they constantly watch. So then they approach one another, and they've both got these images in their minds, and it's just it's crazy.
And then in National Socialist Germany, you know, they taught the young people about how to look for the right kind of a mate. And how to, you know, prepare, how to be a virgin and how to prepare for marriage and all these good things.
Can you imagine how horrified most people would be nowadays if we were to implement something as decent like that across society?
Exactly.
They would be horrified.
They would.
Horrified.
Yeah.
That we were, that the government is telling them how to think.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's comical when you really, you know, think about it. As if they're not being told what to think now. They're just being told what to think that's completely wrong.
Well, you're right. I like the way you think. I mean, you're exactly, I think we're all in agreement here. So where do we
go?
Yeah, so we have that solved. Well, let's go on to, let's see, what have I got here? Regarding the myth of Aryan purism. Oh, I know. Here we're talking about, okay, how about this? Back to where we were. This is in the Outlawing Obesity article, and along with the state, you know, preparing us for to be decent people, what they did in National Socialist Germany in the educational area, where, you know, education there was always pretty strenuous, lots of study, and Hitler instituted that there would be a different kind of regimen in the schools, and while they did study, there would be a lot more time for sports and outdoor activity, and he thought that's what German kids needed. And they needed to be strong in their bodies and so on, and they needed to compete in sports, and so a lot more time was spent out of doors than in the classroom. Now that could be, he thought they didn't need to all be geniuses, you know, the German boys and girls.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. I was just talking with Andre about this over the phone before your show. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a tradesperson, and I was almost exclusively trained by Europeans in Canada, mainly Germans, Swiss, and Austrians, some Hungarians, a couple French. But my best experience was one of the Germans, the Swiss, and the Austrians. And as I was saying to him, you know, my understanding is still to this day in those countries, at the age of 15, you must take a trade by law. By the age of 18, you have a trade under your belt. For it's much more realistic and an interest of the nation. And then at 18, if you were so inclined to go on to take a profession, they differentiate between professions and trades, then you may. If not, you can go on and become a master within your trade.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Well, I think the system is that if you are a real good student, you can continue on with your schooling. But if you're just an average student and you don't show a lot of interest or along with aptitude for further study, then you go into a trade, right, at that age.
But as
you don't stay in school until you're 18 doing nothing and wasting your time like we do here.
Sure.
Hey, servant, we're getting close to the end of the show here. You want to call me, you can call me after the show ends, okay? I'm going to try and talk to Carolyn here for a little while before this, before the show ends.
Okay.
Yeah, sure, sounds good.
Okay, man.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call, a servant.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. All right. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, so I think that expecting everyone to do all of this schooling is a little bit ridiculous. People have different, different strengths and different weaknesses. And I think I agree with what you said there.
Yeah, and there again, it's like what do we call that? The division of labor and so on in a real society where people are all consider themselves one people who care about each other and the same thing. We don't have to be jealous of one another. And you have different people who do different things. And Hitler did try to institute that leadership and so-called elites were very much grounded that they were serving the people and not serving themselves. So, you know, it can be done.
Yeah, I agree. And with that concept of making obesity illegal, I think that this shows, you know, people are like, oh my God, it's people's rights to do whatever they want to do. We have this so ingrained in our minds, and it shows it shows a lack of self-respect first, and then it shows a lack of respect for your society, and I believe it shows a lack of respect for your race and your ancestors to walk around looking like this. It's disgusting, and nobody should have to look at this, and nobody can have any respect for anybody that looks like this. And if you're that incapable of dealing with your own life that you're going to let yourself just become so sickeningly obese, then I believe it's absolutely the right of the community to step in and do something. And in a fascist type of system, the community would be represented by the state. So, I mean, that's my position on that issue.
Well, I agree with you because I find obesity really disgusting, and I'm personally offended by it, and I want to tell people. Well, I don't. But, you know, I mean, I see it basically as a lack of any personal discipline. And for a person to be so undisciplined is just, it's terrible. And there's no reason for it. So these people need to be corrected. They need to be put, like you say, in camps or something and straightened out.
I think, that's what I think. It's hard to make a logical argument against that. It's like, you know, to me, all this stuff just seems so perfectly logical, and that these Jewish arguments are just these sort of abstractions that they come up with, and then they get them solidified in the minds of the people, like it's somehow okay for these people to be like this, and that it's not anybody's right to step in and do something about it. But it just seems perfectly logical that you would put these people in some kind of a camp to get them to work off that fat. I mean, you could give them a program to do it, and if they can't do it themselves, they should be assisted. And I would also blame, you know, all these capitalist corporations that produce this sickening food that people eat, because I don't think the average person is, on a lot of levels, just able to look at the different foods they eat and understand that, you know, some of them are basically poisons, because, you know, they see them advertised. This advertisement is a huge thing, what this does to your brain and the way they can just manipulate your thoughts. I guess we don't really have time to go into all that, but it's a very interesting concept, the way this advertisement works. But people are presented with these foods, and they don't think about it. So, I mean, I think all of this, these trans fats and these high fructose corn syrups and all of these other ingredients that are so unhealthy, I mean, this should just obviously be banned. What is the excuse for this being legal? Logical sense.
Because this is not a nation that looks after the well-being of its people. This is a nation that's just trying to let people make money, and a lot of these... Like, it's known that former defense secretary, now what's his name?
Rumsfeld.
You know, that Rumsfeld, yeah, was a owner of, he had a big interest in aspartame, which is, you know, big health hazard. You know, I know you don't, I didn't know, I was going to ask you if you wanted me to take another caller, but I did answer this person's call, but let's just see who he is, and we don't have to keep him on too long. Hi, caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And you want to give your name and where you're...
Yeah, this is Don from Southern California.
Oh, hi, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
What do you want to ask? Don't give a speech, Don, like, not that you do, but just ask Andre something.
Yeah, question. Do you see a growing awareness of white racial identity and white racial consciousness in today in the aftermath of the 2012 election?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I don't know consciousness. I would say it's a subconscious awareness that's growing of why do we have this person who is so much different than us, ruling over us. It's just unnatural, for us to have somebody who looks completely different than us ruling us. I mean, even though this politics, everything is fake, this is a symbolic thing that's happening here. To have somebody who's not even of our race ruling us.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I have to say this real quick. I agree with that very much, that I think it's not by accident. But we're supposed to understand from this that it is not about us. The United States is not us anymore. It's them. And he's the new kind of leader of the multiracial U.S. And, who knows that we'll never have this, somebody who represents us ever again. And that's why things are in such an extreme position now.
Well, I think that one thing has changed is the open acknowledgement and the gloating and the smirking and even the bragging of a race war that is being waged against white people. It's been waged for 70 years, but only now is it being openly acknowledged. I think that's the difference.
Okay. Andre?
Yeah, I think this is the big coming out with it is presenting this black guy as the leader of a what was a white country. So, I mean, this is kind of their big power play. I mean, it's obviously all just totally orchestrated by Jews. They just pick whoever they want. I mean, Hitler talks about how the media can just pick somebody out at random, and then in a couple months they become the most important person in the world. And this is obviously what they did with Obama. Nobody ever heard of this guy before, and all of a sudden he shows up and he's the new Christ. So, you know, this was clearly very, very purposeful to put a black guy in charge of things, because it is just saying, like, you've lost. It's sort of like a victory dance on the corpse of the white race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now okay, I understand. You know, I don't watch TV, but I have seen some things on the internet lately in which it's becoming very common for Jews who the mass of the people don't even know they're Jews, to be on these talk groups, you know, on TV. And to be saying how good it is that, you know, we're not a white country anymore. This is not a white country. And pretty soon whites will realize it. And it's a good thing that it isn't. And we need more immigration. I mean, you know, all this kind of stuff is becoming just very, you know, what's going on? It's just coming right out there. And so this ought to wake people up, white people.
Well, I'll say good night. And I enjoy the show very much.
Okay, thanks, Don, for your call.
Bye.
Well, one thing we could go into, Andre, is your January 11th blog, lists of things to make illegal. I put down here some of the things that kind of stood out that might make people's eyebrows go up, and one is competing political parties. I thought that was really cool. You want to talk about that? Why do you think that should be illegal in the under fascism?
Well, it just causes social division. I mean, there's no reason you should have competing political parties. You can have people discussing things amongst, you know, people who represent different groups or whatever, discussing how they want policy to look. But to have political parties competing with one another, what can be the purpose of this other than to cause division in society? And we've seen now with this with these recent elections, especially, I mean, the Obama versus Romney was the worst, where they're basically getting up there and agreeing with each other on everything and then having to come up with just bizarre things to debate about. I mean, they did a whole thing about whether or not they wanted to fund, how much funding they wanted to give to the public broadcasting network. You know, meanwhile, the economy has collapsed completely. People are living in tent cities. We've got all these wars going on. We have all these people from everywhere, these sickening, savage people coming into our country. And, you know, they're talking about PBS and gay marriage and just things that no one can possibly even care about. So, I mean, this just shows you that the fact that this continues to go on when there's no real disagreement shows you that the whole purpose of it is to cause dissension within a society which should be unified under common ideals and a common purpose.
Very good. And, you know, once again, under National Socialism in Germany, you know, they make a big thing about how Hitler outlawed other political parties. Well, he did it for the very reason you're talking about, and it was nothing. You know, there's nothing valuable in having all these parties arguing about things. So there you go. But people, as soon as you say that, people, you know, the uneducated people will think it's just terrible. The other thing, you said you should make it illegal to remain unmarried. Maybe it wouldn't actually maybe
I don't
be
know.
Illegal, but this might have been under the discouraged, but
yeah, I call that things that social pressure should be brought against. I mean, I don't think being unmarried should be illegal because that is a personal decision. I'm not completely arguing that personal choice should be abolished. Obviously, there's all sorts of things where it is people's own business what they want to do with their lives, and the state should not be forcing anything on people in certain areas. And I would say that is an area that, you know, the state doesn't really have a place to tell people they need to get married if they decide they don't want to. But I think that this is kind of weird that people don't get married. This is
even,
not
even
something
people
that
who
is,
get, even people who have children together don't get married today. And I will say that, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that it was unusual not to marry or want to get married, and people didn't get divorced much either, and people didn't want to be a bachelor or an old maid. If they were, it's because they didn't seem to have any choice. Not everybody lucks out and finds somebody at the right time in their life, but yeah. So this is just very much a social thing that has been changed under the Jewish Frankfurt School stuff.
The cultural Marxism there. It's and I mean that goes back. I guess it's a little bit complicated. I mean, this is what I say. The easiest thing to do is just say the Jews did all of this, because you don't really even have to know the details, because once you learn some of the details, you see that it's one group of people responsible for all of this. But the feminism played a big role in that. And then the changing of the laws as far as divorce goes. And then the continued schooling for women, the idea that women have to work. I mean, this is what I've said about, you know, because the old idea was that people would, they'd lose their virginity to their partner after their wedding, you know. I mean, this is kind of a very romantic thing. You know, when you tell people that they can graduate from college when they're 23 or 24, it's like, you know, just don't have sex until then. It doesn't, that's not possible. That's probably not even physically possible for most people. This is a biological drive.
Not now, but I know an Austrian, from back in, World War II days said that back then, if you would have sex with a girl, you were expected to marry her, and everybody took that seriously. And so that's what kept them from doing it. You know, we don't have too much time, so I'm going to let you, we've got less than 1 minute. I mean, we've got a little more than 1 minute. So why don't you just kind of sum up here?
Well, we'll have to do this again. I think we've covered a lot today, and these are all important issues. I hope we can talk more about this stuff. People can visit my website, totalfascism.com. If anybody wants to email me, it's on there. I'm up for talking to anybody on the phone. I'll do more interviews.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.